Dan Johnson speaks with Max Mizcotti, director of Sage Metro Portland, working to enhance the lives of older LGBT community members and the upcoming Sage Expo. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support for KBOO Community Radio in our recent fall membership drive.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
How many people are killed by the police? Davey D. spoke last week with a childhood friend of Terrence Crutcher, killed last week by police in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Davey D., Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. And yesterday was a very tragic day in American history. Six people around the United States were shot and killed by police. Within 48 hours, that number has increased even more. And in the past month, 67 have been shot and killed by police, 15 of them black. The most egregious of these shootings involves Lamont Scott, who was in Charlotte, North Carolina, where we saw uprisings as a result of that. And the other is in Tulsa, Oklahoma, with a gentleman by the name of Terrence Crutchers. I have an old friend on the line with me who is very familiar with that city. She grew up there, and she knows who Terrence is. And I wanted to get a little bit of insight, because whenever you mention Tulsa, Oklahoma, if you know anything about black history, you know about the tragedies that beset Tulsa with Black Wall Street. And many of us, looking at what is going on in Oklahoma, in Tulsa, with the large number of police shootings, it seems like the reign of terror has never subsided. So, Aaron, welcome to the show, and we're talking to you all the way in Ghana.
That's right. Live from Accra.
Yeah. Let me ask you, first, our condolences, and if you can tell us how you knew Terrence and what we need to know about him versus what is being talked about in the media.
Yeah, well, I was driving on my way to work when I was listening to BBC Radio, and I heard about the shooting in Tulsa, my hometown, and the name Terrence Crutcher, it sounded familiar, but I couldn't make the connection. But it was when I got to work and I Googled and I saw his picture, and immediately all of the memories started flooding me. I couldn't place exactly where I knew him, but I knew that when I saw his face, I felt his spirit. Like, he was a sweet guy. He was soft-spoken, had like a raspy voice. I could hear the way he called my name. I knew that we knew each other well. And, so like the images just kind of kept flooding in my mind. And for some reason, I thought about my granny. So as I was reading the articles and I saw his twin sister, Tiffany, then it clicked. I grew up with him. I played with his sister all the time. His grandmother lives next door to my grandmother. So I've known Terrence and Tiffany my entire life. It's been several years since I've last seen them. But I thought this was so tragic because, they label him as a big, bad dude. And he wasn't a big bad dude. He was, he was the kind of guy that you would label as like a teddy bear personality. Mm. Gentle, soft-spoken, sweet, wouldn't hurt anyone. And, it's just so painful that it's almost like his identity was stolen right before his life was. To label him like that when that's not who he was.
You mentioned that you heard about this on the BBC News all the way over in Ghana. So these police shootings, they travel internationally. They're known around the world. How do people perceive them where you're at?
It's just, I mean, people think it's crazy. They're just like, you know, what's going on? There's mixed reactions too, because, you know, we have to understand that race plays on all people. You know, anti-blackness. I said anti-blackness is global, and it doesn't work only on white people. It also works on uninformed black people. So the responses to this are similar to the responses you get in the U.S. So you have some people who think that it's unjust and it's senseless and it's outrageous. And then you have some people who lead to, well, but did he have a criminal record, or, you know, was he on drugs? Which actually is irrelevant. You know, redemption is something that all of us as human beings should be entitled to. And mistakes are made by all people, but that doesn't mean that you don't deserve to live.
No, that's real talk. You know, I wanted to talk to you because you are from Tulsa, and as I said at the beginning, there's a long history there, and I know tragedy like this has visited your family at one point, but maybe we can talk a little bit about just the climate in Tulsa and what it means or what we should know about that city.
You know, Tulsa has, well, should I say Black Tulsa or North Tulsa? You know, Tulsa was for a long time a very segregated place, and class-wise, it still is. You have middle-class Black people who have a bit more mobility in Tulsa. But North Tulsa, you know, I was there actually in July, and my cousin described it as, you know, there are parts of North Tulsa that looks like a third world country. And it's true. Tulsa has been, North Tulsa has been under a state of terror and repression since the first time American soil was bombed by an American citizen. And that was the bombing of Black Wall Street by private planes that dropped bombs on a thriving Black community. So Tulsa, for working class Black people, is a depressing place. And there's a long history of the sort of like suppression of Black people who don't have the resources, the means, the grace to escape.
Wow. What happened with your family? You all lost somebody to police terrorism as well?
Yeah, my cousins lost their father before they could develop any memory of him. He was working on his car in front of his own house, and the police came up and thought that he was trying to steal the car, and as he went to turn the ignition off, they shot and killed him. That was, I believe that happened in Waco, Texas, though.
Waco. But the tragedy is still the same, though, in terms of, you know, when we hear these types of incidents, what does that do for the psyche of people? You know, whether you're in Tulsa, whether you're in Ghana, where you're at, you know, how do you see people processing these acts that seem to happen over and over again?
I mean, I can tell you how I'm processing it. I mean, today, to me, it feels like psychological warfare, you know, like the assault against our worth, our right to live is like under attack on a daily basis. And you see something like the guy, I can't recall his name off the top of my head, in New York recently, who, you know, was treated more humanely, and he actually was setting off bombs, you know? So he got taken away for medical attention in a stretcher, whereas a citizen whose car just broke down walks away from or doesn't walk away from the situation and is lifeless. Whereas someone who I can't accuse him before he's tried, but all of the evidence looks like, you know, it was terrorist activity, and he's treated like his value is worth more than someone who committed no crime.
You know, one of the things that people don't want to talk about is the history of white supremacist groups, the KKK, those type of organizations. Oklahoma was a city that where they thrived. Have that really disappeared? Have they morphed into the police department, in your opinion, or is that just, you know, too far of a stretch for some people to make?
Well, we know that the KKK has usually got a lot of traction amongst working class whites, and we know that although the interests of working class white people and working class black people are more similar, the way that race works in America is that even though the class interests don't align with amongst white people of the working and upper class, race trumps all of that. You know, so I mean, I can't say for sure, but yes, I think that a lot of that element enters into the police force.
Most definitely, and that's what it appears to be. You know, Aaron, I appreciate you taking some time out this afternoon to share with us. Are there any, you know, if there's one or two things that you want to leave us about Tulsa or Terrence, as you remember him, what would that be that you want people to take away?
You know, like I said, I just left Tulsa, and both my mother's family and my father's family are from there. I've seen a lot of people like Terrence. I know that a lot of details about his past are coming out, but Tulsa is a depressing place, and hopelessness has really destructive friends. But still, it doesn't mean that a person's life is not valuable and they don't deserve to live it and don't deserve the opportunity to continue to strive to be better and to be more. I remember Terrence as being a God-loving person. If you look on his Facebook page, most of his pictures are of him at church. I know that he had a beautiful voice. He sang in the choir. Like I said, I haven't seen him for many, many years, but immediately when I saw his picture, all of the thoughts and feelings and emotions that flooded me were about his tenderness, about his kindness, about my family's closeness with his family, and my heart really goes out to them, not only because their son, their father, their brother was taken from them, for no fault of his own, but also because he's being demonized. He's being demonized. His last, the last thing that was said about him before he died was a lie. And it seems like that like is like an identity theft followed by murder. So this is, it's just really draining. It's draining. It's depressing. It's numbing. And I just don't know where it's going to end, but it has to, and it's going to one way or the other. It has to.
No, I think people are saying, feeling that there's going to be a breaking point sooner or later. Aaron, we appreciate you taking time out, and sharing with us your thoughts, some things to think about, and I think the most important aspect is you said everybody deserves redemption here. You know, no matter what this guy did, he wasn't doing nothing to put anybody in danger, and he wasn't doing anything to wasn't committing no crime. And people get paid lots and lots and lots and lots of money and take hours and hours worth of training to be able to defuse any situation that is problematic. If they can take in a bomber alive, they can certainly handle somebody who has a broken car on the side of the road. So, Aaron, absolutely. Thank you so much.
Sure. Thank you, Dave.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 5:58. Coming up next, Rose City Native Radio.
Tune into KBOO Friday, September 30th from 8 to 9 p.m. for the Night of 1,000 PSAs.
Performed by the Kathleen Stevenson Retirement PSA Orchestra.
There's no need for that lard
Please
to go
visit
to waste.
girlsanddrinking.org for
Parents,
weight.
The good news is
I start to cough.
Even within the most trustworthy professions.
I don't want to be a piece of garbage.
There's someone.
This is the action.
Sounds like another concerned citizen.
We will enchant you with everyone's favorite radio treasure.
the PSA.
Played in a way you've never heard before.
All at once.
Again.
That's Friday, September 30th.
It's 8 to 9 p.m.
Here on your favorite
community radio station,
KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Affect, a community event about the work, culture, and design of social change. The conference will take place October 7th and 8th at the Ziba Auditorium in Portland. Affect will feature talks from Spawn on Me creator and podcaster Khalif Adams, Ferguson activist and social impact designer Dee Nichols, Nadia Gathers from Code 2040, and many more. Again, that's Affect, October 7th and 8th at the Ziba Auditorium, 810 Northwest Marshall Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
You are listening to a digital indigenous radio show. All across Turtle Island, turn up your radios and decolonize. This is Rose City Native Radio.
Can you tell us Nindin first then?
Hello out there, Portland. How you doing? You enjoying the overcast weather? I'm trying. It's busy out here. We got big fancy Hollywood outside of the station today. Yeah, man, we got